My talk is one called The Penal System as the Linchpin of the Corporate Agenda. State-run prisons, as well as private ones, are warehouses for poor people. Prisons are our major governmental program for poor people, both in the USA and, unfortunately, in most places in our world. Penal abolition goes way beyond fighting privatized prisons, because all prisons are cages for people and instruments of racism, classism, sexism, and the eradication of democracy. Without the penal system, corporate rule could not survive. And without the powerful backing of the transnational corporations, a system as destructive of all human good as our penal system couldn't survive either. As long as corporations have the penal system to dispose of surplus labor, profit from, punish resistance with, and distract the public from corporate failure and abuse, they're home free. And as long as the penal system has the powerful backing of those transnational corporations, with no one shouting about the corrupt connection, we can't change it. But when our two movements come together, the walls can and will come tumbling down. I want to explain just five of these connections that have become crystal clear to me. First, the penal system as industry. Nils Christie has pointed out the greed motive in expanding the penal system is undisguised. We both spoke at a Latin American conference, and Nils quoted there a promotional flyer with these words: "Private prisons maximize investment in this exploding industry. While arrests and convictions are steadily on the rise, profits are to be made. This is the best investment for your dollar." Sick, huh? Another investor observed that he had planned to move his business to Mexico, but U.S. prison labor offered me cheaper rates. The exploitation of prison labor is just a modern adaptation of slavery. And hey, the color of skin of most of the slave laborers is somehow familiar. There's another example I was going to elaborate, but I'll cut down on, that they also advertise shower heads where you can't hang yourselves. And there's something totally obscene about putting people in a place where the suicide rate is 50 times what it is outside, and then devising ways to keep people from committing suicide. Nils Christie and others have pointed out that the crime rates have nothing to do with incarceration rates, and that your rate of incarceration is instead a measure of your image of yourself as a civilized country. But it's also a measure of how much the sheer greed of your corporations have overrun every claim to decency. So first of all, the penal system, government or private, is a very profitable industry, both from building prisons, selling profits, and exploitation of prison labor with inhuman wage rates and no benefits or protections for workers. Secondly, the penal system is an employer and a human disposal system. At that same Latin American conference, Nils Christie quoted figures on the U.S. the number of people incarcerated, when you add in the incarcerated prisoners, the guards, the probation and parole officers, the police, the private police, and the court employees, it comes to 6.1 million people. That was in 97. I'm sure it's up from then. That is 5% of the employable workforce of the United States. That disposes very well of those people engaged in caging and locking up and chasing down each other. Years after spending my first full day observing a bail court in Canada, I wrote a paper comparing it to a gigantic garbage disposal system which grinds up ruthlessly anything that falls into its claws. Unfortunately, 25 years later, nothing significant has changed about that system. When we remove 5% of our potential workforce into a system that brutal, we contribute significantly to the corporate agenda's primary goal to create a more flexible, docile labor force. That means a workforce which will make no demands because they have no security and they live in terror of falling into the street and into total destitution. So we work for substandard wages with no benefits, no security, and demand no dignity and no right in our workplaces. That's how the corporations want us, and that's what the penal system helps them achieve. When 5% of the workforce is engaged in these macabre games, a more flexible workforce is guaranteed. Third, the penal system is a direct enforcer of the corporate agenda. Police are selected, trained, assigned, and programmed to focus all their attention on street crime and even on creating it where it doesn't exist by sweeps in ghettos and provocative actions toward groups of minority youth and toward completely innocent persons. Just in case the police miss in this first stage selection process, courts and prisons continue it, systematically sifting in the marginalized and sifting out the more privileged. In both Canada and the USA, persons in marginalized groups such as Black and Native youth, new immigrants, undereducated persons, physically and mentally challenged, have unemployment rates, I'm talking about real unemployment rates, of 50 to 90%. But they're told that it's all their fault, and they're subject to the same expectation that if you don't have a job, it's your fault and you're worthless. So the more enterprising of them choose an alternative route to success. Another social value of ours hints that money counts, any money. So many Black, Native, or minority youth try the lucrative drug trade or less lucrative street crimes. This keeps police busy catching them, courts and lawyers busy trying them, and prisons busy incarcerating them. Russell Baker wrote decades ago that Nixon wasn't worth imprisoning because at his age, with his background, he was unlikely to justify the investment as long-term fodder for the penal system. The penal system recycles its own with clinging tentacles. When prisoners say to me that the police have it in for them, I say, sadly, that's true. But unfortunately, the same is true for everyone they get their hands on. A young Black man in our neighborhood said to me years ago, I have two choices, to be a drug dealer or to be a basketball star. I'm trying for the basketball star. Maybe that's oversimplified, but it's truer than the myth that his choices are as wide as those of a wealthy youth. And not every minority youth can make it as a basketball star. The penal system exists for the rest of them, and its brutality reminds all those in exploitative jobs and perilous survival situations of what awaits them if they cross the line. But the penal system does pursue some middle-class people and some employed people. Activists, as we were speaking of, have known this for a century. One of our speakers, Diana Barikor-Wiwa, had a brother-in-law hung in Nigeria for challenging the ruthless destruction of Nigeria's environment by Shell Oil. Not only is the penal system used to incarcerate political challengers, but one survey showed that the group most abused in prisons by illegal guard beatings are these same activists. There is a price to be paid for freedom, and we are here to honor those who continue to pay it. Angela Davis and many of our speakers have paid it in one way or another. Their courage has won them persecution from the corporate-guided systems of power. The penal system exists to punish those who challenge corporate rule. ICOPA and other worldwide coalitions are here to honor these heroes in the struggle, to celebrate their witness and counter the lies of the corporations. The penal system is a distraction from corporate pain. The corporate media constantly point to street crime as the major thing to fear in our world. But there are two far greater shadows threatening us, the danger of falling out of our society and the dangers of domestic violence. Corporations choose again and again to maximize profits at the cost of jobs, yet they also promote the myth that anyone can get a job if they try hard enough. So they create real unemployment rates in Canada of at least 20% while propagating the myth that the unemployed choose their fate out of laziness and vice. Under the governments that we have had controlled by corporations, you count as a success if you commit suicide, are driven into mental hospital through breakdown, flee the province or state which is persecuting you, collapse physically from stress so you're class disabled, are driven into the shadowland of the streets for survival, or take to crime and end up in prison? Why are these success routes? Because all of them take you off the welfare rolls. Unemployment and poverty contribute greatly to domestic violence and family breakup. The demands for a flexible labor force conflict with the needs of family life. All of us see, experience, and hear about the doom of environmental destruction going on around us. Yet the corporations take no responsibility for any of this and try to tell us that the marginalized are all we have to fear. And hey, we're arresting them and locking them up as fast as we can. Yet the ungrateful so-and-so still cause problems. As long as they can convince us that the single mother on welfare and the destitute man on the street is responsible for our social woes, we won't notice that the people running our world, jetting around at crazy rates and becoming billionaires, have failed to provide a world where the rest of us can survive and live decently. I have run social agencies most of my career. I worked for boards of directors, and they aren't always as wise as one could wish. But I have never yet found a board so stupid as to blame the janitor for bad administration of my agency. If something's wrong, they rightly question me as director. But we fall prey to this myth, and the penal system is playing this game that the marginalized and the poor are the source of the problem. The penal system distracts us from corporate crime, and many of you heard this earlier, so I'm going to skip through this. But corporations kill 30 people for every homicide, steal $10 for every theft, despite their control of the laws that are made. When I read that the head of General Motors says that safety glass is a bad investment because it won't sell enough cars, I wonder what we'd say if street criminals justified their conduct with this kind of talk. If there's one thing I hope ICOPA 9 does, it's to raise awareness of corporate crime. We need to challenge and identify it. The penal system operates in a dream world, pretending that the small-time marginalized youth it processes are what crime is all about. Let's get real. Corporate crime is real crime. Victim-offender sessions between marginalized youth and store owners are all very well, but they must not distract us from challenging the big realities of corporate crime. And that is why restorative justice inevitably fails, because it does not address the huge issue of social transformation, racism, and classism. In conclusion, when we speak truth to power, we can challenge the corruption of power. Howard Zaire, in reviewing my new book, wrote, we can change our criminal justice system to include transformative methods. We can change our world to one with greater social and economic justice. Ruth Morris challenges us to move away from retributive justice, beyond even restorative justice, toward a justice that transforms, a justice mindful of the social context of crime, a justice that looks not to the past but to the future.